So this is part one of the Core Methods module, Symmetry, and I would like to begin by talking with you about symmetry and the associations that come up with this word and what you already know. So what is your background, where are you coming from, and how are you or why are you interested in the concept of symmetry and how to work with it? Tell me a little bit about that. Yeah?
So in my case, my experiment is based on photoelectric effect. So it's an instrument that uses the instrument is like, the name of this instrument is ARPIS. And for me, symmetry is important because I do both simulations and experimental work.
Yes.
So for my case, it is very important to know the symmetries of the orbitals, how to understand how they behave.
So is this from physics?
Yeah.
Okay. So simulation and experiments and symmetry plays a role for what? For the modeling?
For the modeling.
Aha, I see. Okay. Thank you. Who else wants to share something?
So I'm a theoretical physicist, and I model magnets in general, ferromagnets, anti-ferromagnets, calculate their transport coefficients, like thermal conductivity, and I use symmetry in an intuitive way to understand what my results should be like.
For prediction, so to speak.
Yes.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
I compare my, to check, for example, my code, I can check if it agrees with the symmetry.
Okay, so again, it's used for the modeling and for predicting what should happen. Okay, I see.
I'm an experimental physicist and I work on topological materials. And with topological materials, the physics comes from the symmetry elements of its band structure or crystal group symmetry. And those symmetries define how these band crosses and the new properties which emerges at this band crossing. And the physics, which is usually described to understand the physics, is basically focusing on group symmetries. But I know about symmetry, but I am not aware about how to mathematically represent it.
I see. Yes. Thank you. Okay, so we have a lot of physics. Any other subjects that are around? Chemistry or something completely different? Everyone's from physics, one way or the other. Okay. Any other backgrounds I should maybe know about? What about your math background? So, when was the last time you did serious math? Don't be shy.
Bachelor's.
So in the beginning of your bachelor degree? So was it like analysis maybe, linear algebra, did you solve exercises?
Yeah.
Okay, so you learned some mathematical language and you learned to also work with it yourself, maybe to write down mathematical arguments a little bit? Okay, I will see your faces later, I will see how scared you get when we begin. Maybe not at all. I mean, no. So I just want to guess. Is this kind of familiar, but just a long time ago? Or maybe it's completely new for some people to really work very, very abstractly, very mathematically. Because sometimes in math courses for other subjects, it's not as rigorous as we would usually do it. And then it could be that you end up being a little bit surprised. So this is what math looks like. I had no idea. I thought I knew, but maybe I didn't. So let's see. Did you want to add something to this? Okay, so let's see. Maybe some things will be familiar to you. So, who has already heard the word or maybe worked with the word group? Okay, it has come up. Who has seen the definition of a group? Okay, properly, a mathematical definition. Okay, great. So, who has learned about permutations or transformations? Who has seen this concept and definitions, what it actually is, abstract definitions?
Linear
transformations, like in linear algebra?
Yeah.
Okay. What about, just calculations with objects. So maybe it's the time for me to start writing. What about...
Yeah, let's first get some notation for examples. So, do you know what I mean when I write this? This N with the double line. Do you know what this is? Who can tell me what this is? What set is this?
Numbers.
No.
What numbers?
Natural
numbers. Where do they start?
One.
One or zero, depending on where you come from. It's not fixed. So some mathematicians, when they write this, they start with one. Some start with zero. So I start with one. If I want to start with zero, then I write this. So you can distinguish whether zero is included or not. Okay, so that's the naturals. What about this?
The integers.
What's the difference between the natural numbers and the integers?
Can I have some negatives? Can I have some negative numbers?
I don't understand. You have to speak more slowly.
Oh, sorry. It can accept negative integers.
Exactly. So here we have negative numbers, here we don't. So these start at 0, and then it's 0, 1, 2, 3, blah, blah, blah. And here we also have minus 1, minus 2, blah, blah, blah. So, okay. And we will see why this matters later. What about this?
Rational
numbers? Okay. Familiar? Rational numbers? What about this?
The real
numbers, okay. And then maybe later we will also touch this. Maybe?
Complex.
The complex numbers, okay. All these sets of numbers are used in one way or another in what you do, right? So what if we work with matrices? What calculations with matrices do you know and are you familiar with? So let's start with 2 by 2. Where could these numbers A, B, C, D come from? I mean, if they are numbers, they could of course be something else. But where could these numbers come from so that you know what we're talking about?
I don't understand your question.
Have you worked with matrices?
Yeah.
Okay. So this would be a 2 by 2 matrix?
Yeah.
And where do the numbers come from, the entries?
Do you what matrix it is?
Exactly. So what have you seen in the past?
Stress.
Can you give me some suggestions?
Poly matrices which represent the spin.
Yeah, but then these numbers here, where do they come from?
Oh, you mean the set from one of these? Oh. Yeah. It can be anything, depending on what
matrix.
Complex?
It can be anything. It can be complex numbers, it can be real numbers, it can be anything. But depending on where the numbers come from, the matrices behave differently. Because now we want to do calculations. Mm-hmm. What kind of calculations can we do with matrices?
Transformations.
How do I transform? I mean, with calculations, I mean, we can manipulate a matrix, but also we can combine several matrices. What comes to your mind?
Tensor product.
Okay. Let's dial down and do something far
addition,
more elementary.
Addition, subtraction.
Okay. So we can do matrix addition. What else could we do?
We can also do multiplication, but it's not commutative.
Thank you. Very good point. What else can we do with matrices?
Diagonals, if it's diagonal.
If it's possible.
Yeah.
Not always. What else can we do that is sometimes possible, sometimes not?
Multiplication with a scalar.
Ah, yes. So we have the vector space structure as well. Yeah. Again, yeah. And what else can we do that we can sometimes do with a matrix and sometimes not?
Take an inverse.
So that's another manipulation that we can sometimes do and sometimes not. So this is what I meant. They behave differently depending on what the numbers are, where they come from. So we just have to make sure we clarify before what exactly we are talking about. So I asked this, oh yeah, there's one more thing I should mention. But I asked these questions because I want to establish some common ground for us for examples. Because understanding mathematics means doing mathematics. It's not just listening, it's actually working with mathematics, with the definitions and with examples. and hopefully with examples that exhibit lots of different and maybe strange behaviors. This is how we learn. And we can only do examples if we know things we can do calculations with. So we talked about permutations before, and some people looked at me like they know what I mean. What are permutations? What is the context I need before I talk about permutations? Who has heard of this before? Ah, permutations are new. Maybe?
No.
Interesting.
Like 2C1, those kind of stuff.
Say it again.
How we select something from a bigger set? How are
selecting from a set, yeah, but selecting from a set is not the same as permuting. Selecting would be I take the natural numbers and then I choose the numbers 2, 3, and 5.
Yeah, it's like more like arranging things.
A little bit more like arranging, but then I have to also be careful how I arrange things because, again, I take the naturals. And I take 2, 3, and 5, and now I could rearrange them and say 2 and 3 swap places, and I remove 5. Would that be allowed? Is that allowed?
That is a permutation? That is a different permutation of the same set.
It's not a permutation at all, because I remove a number. I'm not allowed to remove anything. Okay. So this is why we talk about this. What is important for permutations?
Permutation, maybe.
Just a sec.
Formally, you can define it as a bijective map of the subset of the natural numbers to itself.
Yeah. So a permutation of a set, thank you, is a bijective map of the set to itself. So I can rearrange, but I'm not allowed to remove anything. I'm not allowed to add anything. It has to be one-on-one. But everything is allowed to swap places. So for example, in the natural numbers, with zero, I could say, or let's make it much more easy. Let's take the integers. And a very easy permutation occurs if I just change the sign. So 0 stays, and then 1 and minus 1 get swapped, 2 and minus 2 get swapped, and so on. They all change places. So clearly the whole set stays the same, but they just move around a little bit, the numbers, and that's a permutation. So let's just write this down. So this is bijective maps from a non-empty set to itself. And we are going to make this more precise and look at examples later on, but I just wanted to make sure that if someone says the word permutation, and I am very likely to do this, then we should know what it is. When we use the word symmetry, then for now I'm okay with an intuitive usage of the word, but later we are going to make this more precise as well. Yes?
Does it mean you can also define the permutation with the complex numbers, for example?
Yeah, sure. Complex conjugation defines a permutation of the set of complex numbers, so bijective map of the complex numbers to itself. It's a very interesting permutation because it defines the field automorphism. So it's not just bijective, but it also preserves the field structure of the complex numbers. Yeah, for example.
What is field structure?
Field structure. So the complex numbers are not just a set with rules for addition and multiplication, but they are what we at RAST call a field, which means that you have two operations, I call them plus and multiplication, plus and times, and the rules for a field are, actually, I'm running ahead, because in order to define what a field is, and if you like, we can do an introduction to algebraic structures at some point. If you're interested, I'm happy to do a module on that. But the foundation for all these algebraic structures is what a group is. So we should talk about that first. And let's have a little, what's the word, a little bookmark. Maybe you can remind me later that once we have the definition of group, I go back and I give you at least briefly the definition of a field, and then you can decide how interested you are. So there's, of course, there's lots of literature on that, so if you're interested, you can just start reading afterwards. But if you're more interested and if you would like to have a similar course, let's see how you feel tomorrow afternoon. If you like this, then we can have part two, and it could be algebraic structures. For those who came later, hi, I'm Rebecca. We started on time, and let's just make sure that the list reaches the participants so that everyone can sign on. And also, I would like to be able to address you by name. Can you tell me your name? Can you tell me your name? Hello?
My name is Ibrahim.
Okay, I will have to write this down when I have the list back because I need to see how to spell it. So, welcome everyone, and Rebecca, this was maybe clear from context. And let's talk about some words a little bit more, because something that we did here now was take two elements from a set and combine them somehow. Do you have words for what we have been doing there? So for example, if we add matrices, or we subtract, or we multiply, do you have words for what we're doing there? How would you call this?
In German, it's Verknüpfung.
Verknüpfung.
One way to say it in English would be binary operation. Have you heard this before?
Yeah.
Binary operation? This is already getting weak.
I think using all these different pens in the right way and not destroying anything will be one of my biggest challenges
today and tomorrow, because usually I have chalk, just a background and chalk. So I hope it will be fine. Is it sealed? And here I already splashed everything in black, so now I can splash it in red. Okay. Binary operation. This is where we start. So I will not do set theory. It's interesting, but it's also at the very foundation, and it gets interesting in a disturbing way very quickly. We are not going to do set theory. We accept that the sets that we work with here are well-defined, nothing weird or scary happens. They are well-defined, well-behaved objects, for example, numbers. And we believe that we know what these numbers are. Again, there is a mathematical foundation behind this. So what we really need is we need to believe that there is an infinite set, and then we can construct the natural numbers, and then we can construct the integers, and so on, with all the operations like plus, minus, and so on that we know, and then all the rules are what we know, but really this is not, it's not just in the world, it's something that needs to be understood. And again, we're not doing this now. If you're interested, let me know. For now, we accept these domains of numbers. We accept that we can do things like plus, minus, times, sometimes we can divide, sometimes we can do other interesting things. So we will have sets and binary operations for now, and this is the foundation where we start. Is that okay? Can we agree on this for now, for this module, that this is where we start all together, and everything now will be developed together by us in a mathematical, rigorous way? Fine. Now that you've heard me speak for a while, can you understand me?
Yes.
Am I loud enough?
Yes.
Am I clear enough?
Yes.
Excellent. You can talk to me when I ask these questions. You can also do this, thumbs up, thumbs down, or what about my writing? Is it okay? Is it big enough, clear enough? Sometimes the pillars might cause a problem. We have to negotiate that. I can optimize the setting later in the break. You just need to let me know how I can optimize it. I think we might be ready for a definition of a group. So we have talked about some examples of your background, and we have discussed some things that you know already. That was on my list. Let me just look on my questions here. I think I'm happy with the first bit, and we can move to the definition of a group. Here it comes. And again, maybe we need to optimize this a little bit. Does it need to be bigger on the screen, maybe? Should I change something here from the setting?
Slightly maximize.
Yes, I can go away from the full screen, and then I can do that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, I can look it up on its PDF.
Let's try. So it can be a bit more like this. The disadvantage is the lines that separate the different screens. So I'm not sure whether this is better. You have to tell me. Who thinks this is better? Who thinks the other version was better?
This is
okay, no one cares. That's okay.
Now, I need to know because you know this room and you are more accustomed to these lines than I am. So I would find this very disturbing, but maybe only for 5 minutes. So tell me, is it better if it's bigger? Who thinks it's better? A few people think this is better. Okay, and the rest doesn't care. Then I will leave it and you have to complain. And please do, because this is how I work. I do something, you complain, I change it. Okay? Right. Let's look at the definition of a group. We have a set, it's called G, and we have something that I now denote with a dot, and this is what will be our binary operation, which is also why when we combine elements from G, I will use the word times. So for example, if A and B are from G and I combine them with this dot, then I will say A times B. Right? So we should not think about multiplication as the only example because there are more, but it's okay to think of multiplication as one example because it often is an example of such an operation. And let's see what we need for the pair G and dot to be a group in an abstract mathematical sense. There are four properties that need to be fulfilled, and I will discuss each of them a little bit now with you. So the first one is that dot is actually a binary operation on the set G. And this only means that if you take two elements from G and if you combine them with a binary operation, then the result is again an element of G. Now, let's make our life interesting and let's think about a situation where this does not occur. So, can you give me an example for a set G and such a thing that looks like a binary operation, but it's not, because we leave the set. So, it's not a binary operation. Do you have an example for me? Just so we know that this actually has meaning, and it's not just there because we get bored. It's really important. Do you have an example for me? So for G1, what would be a counter example? Any idea?
You could take the subset, a finite subset of the natural numbers and the normal addition, and then at some point it would beat out of the...
Yes, we can do that. Did you have a similar idea? Yeah. The same idea. Okay. So let's take the set 1, 2, 3, and plus. So, yes, 1 plus 1, 1 plus 2, blah, 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 all fine, but then we come to 2 plus 3, oops, we're outside the set. So this is not a set with a binary operation. I need colors. This was the one. This is not a binary operation. So this is where things can go wrong. Okay. Let's look at the next property, G2. The associativity law. That's a tricky one. I can tell you why. The associativity law is something that we just take for granted. We use it in school. We use it everywhere. Has anyone ever seen a context here in this room, except me maybe, where we did not have the associativity law? Did you see it? Yes, did you? That's exciting. Where did you see it?
I remember it somewhere in the differential geometry.
Differential geometry. Yeah, you need something weird. You need a weird set and a weird operation for this not to hold.
Yeah.
Actually, historically speaking, groups come from maps. And if you compose maps, then you automatically have the associativity law. This is something that can be proven in lots of generality, which is why, historically speaking, people didn't even think about this axiom. So when they started talking about groups, this axiom did not exist at first. It only entered the picture later when people noticed, oops, there are things in the world where the associativity law does not hold. Right, so in the exercises, I believe there is one where you have at least to think about this, which is why maybe we don't need to give a specific example here, but we can add it later once we thought about the exercises. G3. There is a neutral element. In particular, there exists an element in the set G, and therefore the set G is not the empty set. A group is never the empty set. This neutral element behaves in such a way that if you combine with it, with a binary operation, then nothing changes. And I'm sure you know examples of this. Can you think of sets and binary operations and an element that behaves like this? Do you have an idea?
Identity.
What is the identity?
Just a diagonal matrix of one.
Like you mean the identity matrix?
Yeah.
And how does it behave in this way? What would the binary operation be?
Multiplication.
Yes, exactly. So this would be an example where this works. So we take, for example, 2x2 matrices, and we take integers as entries, and then we take matrix multiplication, and then we have a wonderful neutral element, namely the identity matrix. 1, 0, 0. Excellent. How can we violate this? So maybe this is not always true. Can you think of a situation where this does not hold?
Even for this G1, you show.
Yeah. This is not a binary operation, as we saw, and even if it were, there would not be such a neutral element. Yes, exactly. So we can use this again. Counter example, so the emphasis should be on counter, so these are examples where things go wrong. CG1. But maybe we can also find something else. Can you see something that is a set with a binary operation, but it does not have such a neutral element? But then you only multiply with I, so what is the set that you are working with? Because
the
you need
matrix.
To...
The I matrix.
The I matrix, okay. Ah, so you mean that you take matrices, again, 2x2, and you have complex numbers as entries?
Yeah.
And then... Yes, but if you take all of them, then such an element exists. So I don't mean that you give me an element that is not neutral, I mean that you give me a set where no such element exists. So that's a bit stronger. So I can see where you are going. So you were looking for examples that don't behave neutrally. Yes, you're right. What I'm asking for is a bit more, namely a set where you would never find such an element. That's even more.
Natural numbers without zero?
The natural numbers without zero, aha, because then you are closed under addition. You even have the associativity law, so you could even think maybe this is a group. Oh no, it doesn't have a neutral element because zero is not there, and zero would be the only number that could do it. Okay, so let's write down natural numbers without zero and plus. That's another good example where something goes wrong. And now let's look at the last axiom, G4. So here we claim, or we ask, that every element in the set G has a little body such that if we combine them with the binary operation, we get the neutral element. So if we think of matrices, then this is very natural. As soon as a matrix is invertible, if we multiply the two, we get the identity matrix. So that's an example where we see how this works. But maybe you can tell me an example where it goes wrong. Again, can you think of a set with a binary operation where we do not have inverses? Or maybe not for all the elements. Because G4 says every group element has an inverse, which means that if we find only one little element that doesn't, then it's not a group.
Your whole numbers. The set of whole numbers.
The set of all numbers.
The natural numbers with the zero.
The natural numbers with the zero, okay. And then what would be the binary operation?
Plus
again. And then why do we not have inverses?
We don't have negative numbers.
We don't have the negatives. Yes, that's a very good example. Thank you. So if we take again n and plus, whether we add zero or not doesn't even matter. Even if we add zero, so we have a potential neutral element, it wouldn't work. The item is not added. So we have no inverses here because we have no negative numbers. Okay,
Okay, so my strategy to use these glass water markers here as well is not working. So tomorrow I need to bring, or I need to ask for flip chart markers. We need more of those. Is it readable at all at the back? Is it roughly okay? Good. So now we have the definition of a group. And let's look at some more examples. I listed some, so we are going to discuss all of them. This will take us some time, and then we will probably have a tiny little break of a few minutes. But let's start working on this, because this is how, this is what life of a mathematician is like most of the time. We develop new concepts, so we have definitions, and then we look for examples. And we try to be very thorough when we investigate the examples, because we need to make sure that everything the definition holds. But also we look for counterexamples, because we want to distinguish the new concept from old things we already know. This is very important. So this is how a theory moves forward, mathematically speaking. We have a definition, we check whether it's interesting first, so we look for some examples, and then we look for things that can go wrong in order to understand better what happens. In particular, when we start with a definition like this, usually we have some examples in mind, but we don't always know how strong the definition is. Now, if we just look at this, we have four little axioms. They're not very strong on first sight, because we have seen lots of examples where this holds. We've seen some examples where it doesn't hold. And we will look at a lot more. But without a further glance, without further investigations, it would be hard for us to guess whether this is a very narrow concept and there is only a little bit of theory, or whether it's a wide concept with lots of theory and a gigantic universe of things that happen. Right now we don't really know, just from the definition, which is typical for many mathematical definitions. Right, so I'm going to sit down for a bit until I will start writing again, because now it's your turn to tell me about the little examples that I listed. So let's look at them together and discuss all the properties G1, G2, G3, G4 for each one of these examples that I listed. So I started with the natural numbers and plus, just the usual addition that we know. So tell me, which ones of our axioms hold and which ones don't? What do you think? The natural numbers are a set, that's good, and it's not empty, that's also good, and we know how to add numbers, great. So if I add two natural numbers, do I get another natural number, always? So G1 is fine? Okay. Associativity. You're not, maybe you learned this in school, I don't know. I learned this in school, but of course I learned it as this is a fact, it was never proven. So if you do this properly, if you construct the natural numbers properly mathematically, then you have to prove that this rule holds. We are not going to do this now, but usually this is what you would have to do. So for now, we believe that the associativity law holds for addition and the natural numbers. And that's fine, because it's things we learned in school. It's okay to believe this for now. What about a neutral element? We already talked about this. So this is the natural starting at 1. What do you think about G3? No, it doesn't hold. So we can stop here. If the question is just whether this is a group or not, then we can stop. If we're interested in looking for examples for various situations, then it can be interesting to look whether other axioms are satisfied, so we can look at G4. And again, we have already seen it as a counterexample. It's not satisfied. We do not find inverses. In fact, for none of them. So it goes really, really wrong. Not just a little bit. Right? Next example. Now we add 0. G1 and G2 are still fine. What about G3?
Yes.
Ah, yes, we have 0. Okay. Excellent. G4? Ah. Is it as bad as before? Is it better in the sense that at least we have some elements now with an inverse?
It's still not a group.
It's still not a group, but before we did not have inverses for everything, and now do we maybe have inverses for some elements?
Just one.
Which one?
Zero.
Zero has an inverse, namely itself. All the others still don't have an inverse. So the situation is marginally improved. Not very much. Okay, thank you very much. Now we come to the integers, again with addition. So what happens then? First, we need to check what happens if we add two integers. Do we get another integer? Again, we believe this from school, and again, it would be a mathematical homework to do this properly. But yes, we can believe this from school. Same for the associativity law. Again, we can believe this from school. What about G3? Do we have a neutral element in the integers with addition? Is there a number that behaves neutrally? What could it be?
Zero.
Zero? Yeah, anyone else thinks zero?
Zero
is fine. Yeah, zero works. What about inverses? Again, you nod. How does it work? So how do I explain how to find the inverses for each integer? I need this for every single one.
So 1 plus x is equal to 0, and x is equal to minus 1, and minus 1 belongs in the set.
Aha, okay. So I kind of believe that I find such an element, so I write out an equation, and I search for the inverse that I need, and I find there is a possibility. The ordering in which we do this is important, because maybe you notice that nowhere in the axioms does it say that we can interchange the way in which we combine the elements. In all our examples so far, most of our examples so far, it was okay to interchange the ordering. If we add two numbers, it doesn't matter which way around we do it. But it's not an axiom, so we have to keep our eyes open for situations where the ordering matters. In particular, in the axioms, maybe you notice that in G3 and G4, there is an ordering. So in G3, the neutral element comes from the right. And in G4, the so-called inverse element comes from the right, too. So both times, it's important that the element that I claim exists and does something comes from the right. I do not make any statement about what happens when I reverse the order. More on that later.
Doesn't that follow from the definition?
It does, later, but we have to work for it. It's not automatic. And some people give a definition of a group that is too strong in the sense that it includes this, but it's not necessary. And another thing that we try to do in mathematics is to really strip down to what is necessary and to deduce everything else from there. So yes, thank you. It's not very tricky, but it is something we need to work on for a little bit. This will come next. Now, what else do we have? Oh, permutations on a set with three elements. Now things get interesting again. So we talked about what... Let me use the whiteboard because this is better with the markers. Yes, this is a glassboard marker. I'm not damaging anything, and I should use the one that's here. I'm surprised by how warm this green is. It's like I'm on a grill or something. So let's take a set with three elements, and we just give them the numbers 1, 2, and 3. So we look at permutations of the set 1, 2, 3. Have you seen notation for permutations? So I've seen before that some of you did not really know what permutations are, or maybe they have not seen a formal definition, which is why we might want to talk about notation for that. So permutations are maps, which means that usually for each permutation, I have to tell you exactly where these three numbers go. But that would not be very practical, right? If every time I take a permutation, I have to write down these three numbers and then point to their images and write these down as well, then everything becomes really big and the notation becomes very messy. There are shortcuts, there are several ways to do this, and one way that I prefer because it's very short is to organize what the map does in a line with numbers.
let us begin by thinking about what possibilities we have for permutations and how many there are. So how big is the set we are talking about? Can you tell me something about this? Let's look at this systematically. What can we do with the numbers 1, 2, 3 if they swap places and we cannot leave anything out, we cannot add anything? What can happen? I think you mentioned the word rearrange earlier. I quite like this word because it gives good intuition what happens.
So maybe 6 is like 3 factorial?
3 factorial. How did you calculate this?
So if there is an n number of set, I guess it's n factorial.
But why?
Can I?
Do you want to start first or do you want to have a buddy who helps? Okay, try.
So the first place can have 3 possibilities. So the second place.
Why are there 3 possibilities for the image of the first number?
Because it's 3 numbers.
Mm-hmm. It's a map from the set into itself. So the image has to be in the set, and there are 3 possibilities. Yes. So 3 possibilities for the image of 1. Okay, and then stop.
2. Okay.
And then one number is taken, which means that 1 is gone, and then 2 has 2 possibilities left, exactly. And then once we've done this, there's only 1 possibility left for the last number where it can go. So this gives 3 times 2, which is 3 factorial possibilities. And what exactly do they do? Can we somehow systemize this? So there's one map that most people forget. What do you think is the map that most people forget? That's a mean question, sorry.
The identity map.
The identity map. Do nothing. Yeah. So whenever you see a group, you should always ask yourself, what does it mean to do nothing? It's very important to do nothing sometimes.
How?
To do nothing means 1 gets mapped to 1, 2 gets mapped to 2, 3 gets mapped to 3. The numbers just sit there, nothing happens, and they say, hi, I'm here. So it's like, you know? Yeah. And then for the next map you say, okay, now come on, you have to move. At least 2 of you. Because if only 1 number moves, then there is nowhere where it can go. So if 1 number moves, then there has to be a second number that moves as well, otherwise they cannot be rearranged, which means that if we don't do nothing, then we have 2 types of maps that can happen. There's one type where 2 numbers move and the third number stays. And then there's the second type where everything moves. And now we just have to find language for that and notation. So one possibility is the identity map, which I will write as ID. And whenever we talk about maps, then ID will always be my notation for the map that does nothing. Now, can you explain a possibility to me where 2 numbers change places and the third number does nothing? What could this look like? Just make it precise by telling me where the numbers get mapped. So you just have to tell me 1 goes to, 2 goes to, 3 goes to. You just have to set something where I said How does it go? Just give me your ideas.
1 and 2 map onto each other. And 3 maps onto itself.
3 maps onto itself, I understand. The other statement was not clear enough for me. What exactly do you mean?
That 1 maps to 2 and 2 to 1.
Aha, okay. 1 and 2 swap places, you could say, or they interchange or something, because if you say they get mapped onto another, it's not clear, because they could stay or they could swap. So let's try and practice, be very precise, super precise. Mathematicians' language is, what's the word I'm looking for? So in German I say pingelig. It's just annoyingly precise, maybe, sometimes. 1 and 2 could swap and 3 stays, and my notation for this is this, bracket, 1, 2, bracket. This means 1 goes to 2, 2 goes to 1 because there is no other number here, and if a number is not mentioned at all, it means it's not moved. So it's one of the standard notations for permutations in finite group theory, which is one of the reasons why I'm using it. And also it's really short, and it's really easy to work with it once you get used to how I apply maps, which will be a totally different story. More on that later. Okay, one and two swap places, three stays. And this is the permutation of this set, because it's a map from the set to itself, and it's bijective. We can reverse it by just applying it again. If one and two swap again, then we have reversed the map, so it's bijective. Okay? Is that fine with you? Is the notation clear the way I explained it?
Yes.
There are two more elements of the same type, and I think you are able to tell me which ones they are. What do they look like, the other ones? What do you think?
2, 3, and 1, 3.
Yes. So 2, 3 with the same notation means that 1 stays where it is, and 2 and 3 swap places. And now same for 1, 3. And now you can see a system. So if the set gets bigger, then you always have lots of these, and you can count how many there are by doing combinatorics. You just need to pull out two numbers of the set of n numbers.
Does the order matter in this notation?
Excellent question. Thank you. Does it? You tell me.
You are writing the same order in which it is in the original set, but when you write it in the bracket notation, and you just mean it that they are swapping places. So,
yes, so would it be the same here if I wrote 3, 2 in brackets? Is that the same map?
No.
Why not?
It would be another possibility from a different set of a different set. Or that is how I
but why? What is the difference between these two maps? So this map here says 1 stays, 2 and 3 swap places. What does this notation mean?
Same.
1 stays, 3 goes to 2, 2 goes to 3, they swap places. So interestingly, it's the same map although it looks differently. So strictly speaking, it's different, but the map is the same. So I can use this notation interchangeably. And there is maybe one reason why it's worth sticking to this. It's just that it's more organized, and when we count things, then we can have a system how we do it. So I use the ordering if there is one. If we have a set that is not ordered, then it really does not matter. Not at all. Just because of the way this is read. This means 2 and 3 interchange, and this means 3 and 2 interchange, and it does not matter which way around I say it, because the important thing is that one stays and the other two move. I will give you an example in a moment where it matters more. What did you want to say?
I think that this mapping is really same in this case because all the elements are positive. That's
why. But if, let me think of an example where I'm naming things differently. Thank you, this is a very good point. If my elements are called minus 1, 0, and 1, I can do the same thing, and again I have 6 possibilities, 3 times 2, same idea, and I can use the same notation. So why is minus 1, 1 the same map, or maybe not the same map, as 1, minus 1? It doesn't matter. The size of the elements, and negative and positive, does not matter. It's really just the definition of the notation. If there are two numbers like this, it doesn't matter which way around I write them down, just because they swap anyway. There is no... One number is not more important than the other, somehow. Yeah, so it really doesn't matter. But your question or this discussion makes me very happy, because it means that you start to think mathematically. You see something, you see an ordering, and you immediately ask yourself whether it matters. And that's great. That's the kind of instinct and intuition that we need. Oh, for people who came later, hi. If you're a participant, then please sign on the list. I think you have it right now.
Oh.
If you're just here for fun, that's fine.
Yeah, I'm okay.
So just check whether your name is on the list. And it's allowed to be here for fun. It's allowed to do mathematics for fun. But I need signatures from the people who were...
Are you here for the clock?
I'm sorry, I think I made a mistake. I should go downstairs.
Ah! There's a talk downstairs.
Okay, so if people keep walking in randomly...
Yeah, I think there'll be more. I think someone is coming to it.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Oh, I have so many stories of like big lecture halls and then people randomly coming in, sitting down, and after 10 minutes they notice they are in the wrong.
He was the second one, I think.
Okay, so let's just write down that these are the same. The ordering does not matter there, but this is only 4 marks and we counted before that we have 6. So what is missing?
3.
Move all 3. How can I move all 3?
1 goes to 3, 2 goes to 3, 3 goes to 2.
If 1 goes to 3, then 2 cannot go to 3 because
no,
the map is identical.
1 goes to 3, 2 goes to 1. Yeah.
Ah, okay. 1 goes to 3, 2 goes to 1, and
3 goes to 2.
Okay, so they go in a circle like this. Uh-huh. Like that. So they all move. It's like musical chairs. That's one possibility, and now let's introduce short notation for that. So 1 goes to 3, 3 goes to 2, 2 goes to 1. If we follow the same logic that we have here, then we can just write this 1, 3, 2, brackets closed, and we read it in the same way. 1 goes to 3, 3 goes to 2, 2 goes to 1. No numbers left, nothing left to be explained. The ordering clearly matters now. Right? Because now if I interchange something, then maybe it's not the same map. So we can talk about variations and how we can change the numbers to the same map and how we should. There's again something missing. One more map to find. What is the last map that is possible?
Just empty brackets, where you don't change anything.
Empty brackets is the identity.
Oh, sorry.
We already have the identity, but it's good that you remember that we need it. So, now there's something else missing.
3 to 1.
3 to 1 would mean 3 goes to 2, 2 goes to 1, 1 goes to 3, which is the same as this, just written down differently. Just a sec.
3 goes to 1.
Ah, you want 3 goes to 1. Ah, so you want this. 3, 1. 2. Aha, that's a different map. Exactly, that's a different map. And now, my convention, and I'm not very strict with it, it's really just for organizational purposes and for bookkeeping. My convention is that I put the smallest number first. If I notice, and if I know, because they are numbers and I can see how they are ordered. Which means I would rewrite this as
1, 2, 3.
First, then 2, then 3. And here I could also change the ordering, but I don't want to because 1 is already in the first place. But now we see very clearly that the ordering matters. Here 1 goes to 3, and here 1 goes to 2. Now we know all 6 elements, and I have taken some time because permutation groups. And we still have to check that they become grouped with whatever binary operation. Permutation groups are at the foundation of lots and lots and lots of applications of group theory and modeling with symmetry. This is why I'm spending so much time here. Once you get a good intuition for permutations, then you will be able to look at many, many situations where there is regularity, symmetry, whatever that you want to use in your models or in your experiments. And you will be able to look at it differently, and you will be able to use it in your models more efficiently, because now we're developing systematic language, how to deal with that. This is why I would like us to spend quite a bit of time here. We have a set. Let's call the set script P, maybe, for permutations. 6 elements. We have notation. We need a binary operation. We need a binary operation. And what can we do? Because these things are maps. How can we combine maps? What can we do with maps? So there might be a binary operation here that we can use with. What is our binary operation? The set G now is script P, the set of all permutations of the set 1, 2, 3.
and we wrote down all the elements so we can work with them. But now we need something for dot. We need a binary operation, and I was asking what it could be, because it's max. How do we combine max?
With an identity multiplication.
What is the multiplication of maps? How does it work? It's okay to call it multiplication, but I still have to understand what it does. So what does it mean to multiply these two maps? What does it mean? Have you seen things you can do with maps, how you can combine them? Maybe way back in analysis or linear algebra, have you seen something that we could use here? Is there a vague memory?
You perform the first map and then take the value of this first map.
Yeah.
There's an argument of the second map. So.
You apply them one after the other, if possible. And here it is possible because everything maps from this little set into itself. So we can always reapply. I'm sure you know words for that. Try and remember. Do you have words for that? Composition of maps?
Yes.
Composition. Right. Composition of maps. And now things get interesting because I guess that you have learned about maps in such a way that it looks like, let me check this. That it looks like this, f of x. X is the argument, f is the map. This is probably how you work.
Yes.
I do differently, and there is a reason why. Because I think in algebraic terms, and most of the time, it's way more natural for me to think of maps as something that does something to an object, and I'm interested in both the object and the map, which means that the map is not sort of coming from the left and then doing something to this thing here. But very often I apply several maps one after another, and then this becomes messy, which is why my notation is that the argument is down and the map that does something is up like an exponent, and I read the map like I read from left to right, which means that now if there is a second map coming, so we decided we want to take maybe multiplication as our symbol, so if there is a map G, then f times g means I apply first f to x, and then there is some result, and then I apply g to it. So I do it as I read, which for me is much more natural, and in algebraic thinking, this is very often the way that we go. I understand that maybe for you this is a little bit weird right now, and it takes some getting used to it. Which is maybe good, because when we're a little bit irritated, then our brain is capable of interesting things. So we break old patterns and we think about new things. In our situation, let's just say that we use a dot for multiplying maps, and multiplying maps means applying them one after another in the way that we read them from left to right. Once you get used to it, it's very intuitive. But I will say composition, because that's the proper word. And let's practice this for a moment with the set, because everything is a bit new and unusual maybe. So let's compose 1, 2 and 1, 3. What does this map do? We don't know yet, but we hope that whenever we compose two of these maps, then again we get one of these maps, because we hope that we will see a group here at some point. Right? So let's try and do the calculations. How can we do such a calculation? By applying the same principle that we have applied with this notation,
yeah.
We just check where the numbers get mapped to. So for number one, we just check where does it get mapped. So from left to right, 1 gets mapped to 2. This is this first map here. 1 gets mapped to 2. So our new number that we look at is 2. What happens to the number 2 now here in this map? What does it do to the number 2? Nothing. Nothing. Thank you. That was great. Just shaking your head. Nothing happens. Yeah, excellent. So 1 goes to 2. 2 doesn't move at all. So 1 goes to 2, which means in our notation that I open a bracket, 1 gets mapped to 2, and then I have no idea what happens next, so I wait and I go back to look what happens. So now 2 is the next number I want to look at. What happens to 2? First map, what happens to 2?
2 goes to 1.
Excellent. 2 goes to 1. So I keep 1 in my mind and I move on to the next map. What happens to 1? It goes to 3. So all together, 2 is mapped first to 1, then to 3. So the image is 3. 2 goes to 3. Excellent. We have notation for that. And now I don't really know what happens, but maybe my intuition is to close the bracket. But if I close the bracket, then I make a statement, namely that 3 goes to 1. So before I close the bracket, I better check where 3 gets mapped. Okay? Because still, we don't know. There could be weird accidents that happen here. Let's check where 3 gets mapped, and you can do it for me. So, where does it go?
It stays at 3.
It stays at 3, and then?
At 1.
It goes back to 1. Ah! So I can close the bracket, and I have now established that the composition of 1, 2, and 1, 3 is 1, 2, 3. If I do it in this ordering, what happens if I reverse the ordering? What's your experience with maps and the composition? If we reverse the ordering, what happens usually? The same or something else? Something else usually, right? Yeah. Yeah, because maps are interesting. Maps are interesting if you compose them and you reverse the order, then usually something else will happen, as is the case here. Do you want to do the calculation the other way around? Yeah, let's do it. And of course, I will not prove that this is a group by doing all these combinations of elements. Of course, we will think of an abstract argument. But we have to practice using this notation, so we might as well do it here in this way. And now I just wait for your suggestion and for an explanation.
One, three, two.
1, 3, 2. Okay, so it would just be the other element that goes round in a cycle, okay. I believe you for now. Can you explain?
Yeah.
Yeah, explain.
So like first 1 is going to 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 should goes to 2. But, yeah.
1 goes to 3. Yeah, so here it goes to 3 and then it stays, okay. 3 goes to 1 and then to 2. That's fine. And 2, can you explain 2?
Yeah, then 2 tries to go to 1.
Yeah. Exactly, it stays the same and then it goes to 1, and so we close the bracket and everything is fine. Yes. In fact, if you want to practice this, here's a little suggestion for homework. Whenever you take 2 of these, where 1 is still and the other 2 move, whenever you take 2 of these and you combine them, if they are the same, then they cancel each other out. If they are different, then you always get one of these combinations with 3 numbers. Just check. And reversing the order means you get the other one, which is not a coincidence, as will become clear later. Because if you look at these elements and how they behave, these are inverse to themselves. So they are bijective maps, they have an inverse map, and actually it's the same map that is the inverse. Whereas here, it's different. Can you tell me what the inverses of these maps are? How do you reverse the map 1, 3, 2? Sometimes a visualization
can have
2, 1, 3, 2. So 1, 3, 2 means this. So how do you reverse it? You can have a picture in your head if you like. How did you reverse it? How did you reverse this map? 1, 3, 2?
1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3. Just the other way around. Yeah, exactly. You just reverse the arrows. And then you have the other map. So these are inverses of each other, not of themselves. So we see different behaviors here.
And now here comes the abstract reason why this is a set with a binary operation.
The elements of script P, these permutations, are bijective maps of a set into itself. The set is 1, 2, 3. If I compose two such maps, then the composition is bijective again. This is something, this is just math, basis math. I do this in linear algebra with my young students in, I don't know, week, well, maybe not week two, I'm not sure, but at the beginning sometimes. If you're interested, let me know and we can make little excursions and do things like that. So you have two bijective maps from the same set to itself, you compose them, it doesn't matter which way around, you get a bijective map. Okay. That's one good thing, because it means that if we take two permutations of the set and we apply them one after the other, then we get another permutation, which means that the composition of maps, the dot that we defined, is actually a binary operation. That's axiom G1. The associativity law for maps and for composition holds anyway. Again, if you're interested, we can discuss this. So G2 holds. Yes, what is G3? We need a neutral element, something that doesn't change anything if we use it for the binary operation. Do we have a candidate? What could it be? The identity map, exactly. If we compose with the identity map, then nothing interesting happens. So we have a neutral element, and now all we need are inverses. Do we have inverses? We discussed it 2 minutes ago. We do, right? We can even name them. This is inverse to itself, this two, this two, this two. These are inverses of each other. Done. Group. All the other examples that we saw before of groups were infinite sense. And it didn't matter which way around we applied the binary operation. Here we have an example where something completely different happens. The set is finite and the ordering matters. So for people like me who do research in group theory, this is interesting. At least it starts to get interesting. Infinite sets, okay, I'm a bit scared of infinite sets, but yeah, I know that infinite groups are interesting, but groups where the commutative law holds, so where it doesn't matter which way around you compose, not very interesting for me. This is where it gets interesting. And this is also where the applications come from. Many, many applications come from permutations. We will see later how we can make this more special by not just permuting sets, but by having objects, maybe like graphs or other things. And then we use the same principles, but we make it stronger, but by not allowing all permutations, but we restrict it a little bit. They have to be able to do more. But always the group structure will come back to us, and we will be able to use it, and to use it for modeling and for understanding what's going on. So this is why we spend a lot of time here. And I hope that now, at the latest, you are convinced that this theoretical setup is useful for us, that it makes sense to abstractly look at what a group is and what it can do, because we have seen very, very different examples now. Let's look a little more. So we have permutations. Let's take just a moment and think about what happens if we make the set bigger. So now we started with the set 1, 2, 3, but of course, who should stop us from taking the set 1 to 7, or 1 to 100, or 1 to a million? Some things change. It gets massively bigger, obviously. Some things stay the same. What stays the same? How can we use these arguments and just extend them, even if the set has a million points and not just three?
Pattern of dimensions.
Yeah. It's still arrangements, we can still count them the same way we did. It will still be size of the set faculty. Possibilities, yes. We can still use the composition of maps to get a group because we still have all the rules for the calculations. We will still have that it's closed under the operation. The identity map will always be neutral. We will always find inverses abstractly because we have bijective maps. So even if we don't always know the inverse, we know there always exists one. Which means that sets of permutations of non-empty sets can be one of your to-go examples if you want to check things for groups. And it's good to have examples like this. Let's make it a bit more tangible. So here,
I don't know about you, but when I started drawing this, I saw a triangle. Who else saw a triangle? In my inner mind, I didn't draw it, but I saw a triangle. Let's draw a quadrangle. I claim that the set of rotations of this quadrangle is a group. So first of all, we need to clarify what we mean by rotations. So when I say this, rotations of a square, what comes to your mind? What is your intuition about that? How do you describe such a rotation? I just want to make sure that we all mean the same, because maybe we don't. So what do I mean, or what do you think about when I say rotation of a square? What comes to your mind?
Considering one point as a center and
exactly, I take the center and I rotate around it. So a corner needs to be mapped to a corner again, and a side line needs to be mapped to a side line. So basically, the numbers here swap places, but they cannot swap places arbitrarily. So it's different from just interchanging the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4 in a set. If I just rearrange them, then there are lots of possibilities. If I want to respect the square, then I don't have as many possibilities. And of course, the square has more symmetry than just rotations. More on that later. But now let's just stick to rotations. How many are there? How many different rotations? Just say it out loud if you have an idea. You can give me angles, you can tell me where the numbers go.
So the diagonally swapping is not allowed, right?
Rotation. Is diagonally swapping a rotation?
180? Yeah. 4. We can rotate this. So two can go to 4.
Just a sec. If it's a rotation, then no point is fixed because they all go round. Unless I fix everything because I don't do anything. Or 360 degrees, right? But otherwise, a rotation cannot have fixed points, which means that if you take a diagonal and you swap, it can't be a rotation. It's a symmetry, it's just a different kind of symmetry, and we come back to this later, so I'm glad that you have it in your mind. That's good, keep it, and get it out later when we need it. But for rotations, unless we do nothing, the points have to move, all of them. Yeah. So how can they move?
So six ways, just like One can go in place of two, three, or four,
mm-hmm.
and also counterclockwise.
Ah, okay. So you count six possibilities. And I wonder, now if one goes to two, then it means that two has to go to three to four. Mm-hmm. So I go once around like this, 90 degrees. Yeah. Isn't it the same as going 270 degrees the other way around? Yeah, so when you count six, I understand why you counted six, but I think you count everything twice just by differentiating which way around it goes. But again, we see that the perspective plays a role, because it matters whether I view a map as this is the square, and this is the square after the mapping, and the process doesn't matter, or the way you started counting, the process mattered. To you, it mattered which way around things were rotating. Which is fine, it's just a different way of thinking of it, and we have to make sure we talk about the same thing. For a map just knows where it starts and what the end result is, and it doesn't, mathematically speaking, it doesn't care about what happens in the middle. So I could go round and round 100 times. Maybe the square wouldn't feel so good, but for the map,
It doesn't matter. This means we have the identity map, that's the rotation with 0 degrees. And then what would be the next rotation?
90 degrees.
So we have two. Next? 180 to 70. So we have 4 rotations. These 4 rotations can be identified with maps from these numbers, and we can use notation as we did before. So if 1 goes to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, 4 to 1, that would be 90 degrees counterclockwise, and we can use the same notation as before. Bracket, 1, 2, 3, 4, bracket closed, and so on. So we can basically really do as we did before. We get a set of 4 rotations, we can again use the composition of maps as binary operation, and it works because if I compose 2 rotations, again, I get a rotation, same center, same object, blah, blah, blah. And again, we can check that we have an identity element if we do nothing. And what about inverses? How do I find the inverses of the rotations?
Clockwise and counterclockwise.
Mm-hmm. That's one way. But the way we described it now, we took a direction and we kept it, and so we're not allowed to change the direction of the rotation. Do you have a solution for that?
I mean, but then in the triangular case, we went the other way around.
Exactly. That was because I wanted you to get this intuition for reversing the arrows. Mm-hmm. But if I was talking about rotations of a triangle, then I would first establish which way around we rotate, and then I would say we rotate counterclockwise, and that's not allowed to change. In that case, I would not have drawn the arrows in this way. That was for a different example. So thank you for noticing that. Maybe we can just adopt the picture so that it respects the direction of the rotation. I said counterclockwise. I want to stick with counterclockwise. So these arrows here in the middle have to go. How can I take the same map, but such that I move counterclockwise? Do you have an idea? How can I do this?
2, 3, 1. Like just another combination is 2, 3, 1.
2, 3, 1 is the same rotation we have here. We want the other one, but we want to express it with counterclockwise rotation. How can we do that? This is interesting because for some people this is totally intuitive, and for some it's like, what is happening? That's normal. That's completely normal. Do you have an idea?
Is it like we have to rotate the system with the same center?
Yes.
Same center. So not like this, but like this, maybe?
2D. For the moment, we don't believe in the third dimension.
Wait, what is our goal?
It's mean, I know.
What is our goal? This is already a counterclockwise rotation. What do we want?
We want the inverse of this map, but we want it expressed as a counterclockwise rotation, rather than just reversing the arrows, as I did before. And you pointed out that why this was correct in terms of maps. If we look at a triangle, and rotations, then I shouldn't do it that way. That's a very interesting little extension of the example. I'm quite happy. Yes?
Can I take a mirror?
That would be a reflection. At the moment, we're talking about rotations. So that would be, again, important for later. So please make a bookmark. I will ask about reflections later, but not now. How is this tricky? I like
twice.
It that it's tricky.
Twice.
Yeah.
Because we know when we rotate.
We just take a longer way. 1 goes to 3 this way around. It doesn't have to go the short way. Counterclockwise means it just goes the long way. And 2 goes to 1 the long way. And 3 goes to 2 the long way. Ha! That's the solution. So you just go the way you go, but the other way around, you take the long route, but the direction is correct. And this is how we solve the problem of reversing arrows. No, we don't. We just complete the circle. This is how maybe you can visualize it. So if you start with a rotation and you want to find the inverse map, then just think about what you need to do to complete the circle, and then that would be the corresponding inverse rotation. In this way, we now find a group with 4 elements, 4 rotations. Again, the binary operation is composition. And in this group, does it matter which way around I apply the rotation, or does it not? What do you think? I don't mean the direction matters. I mean, if I compose two such rotations, does it matter which way around I apply them? What do you think?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't matter. Why not?
Two rotations continuously, one will be turn three, or it will reach the same opposite place either way. I mean,
yes, and how can we express this mathematically? So if you think about the rotation and how you can briefly describe what it does and how far you need to go, what is the composition of two such rotations?
Rotation by 180.
Say it again?
Rotation by 180 degrees.
That would be one example. So what I'm getting at is how we can use the rotation angle.
So if it's n fold symmetric, you can divide 360 by n, and like
yes.
All multiples of that will be allowed in the...
Yes. So if we have a regular n-gon, and later we will have a regular n-gon, then we just divide 360 by n, which gives us the basis degree for the basis rotation. And again, this will be done mathematically later on. But yes, thank you. This is the idea that will come later. It does not really answer my question whether it matters which way around we apply to rotations.
We need to construct the matrix.
Way too complicated. I mean, we could. And it would turn out in the calculations that it does not matter. Your intuition is correct. It does not matter. But at the moment, you don't yet see the simple argument, or one of the simple arguments.
In this case, the 90-degree rotation is like a generator for all the other rotations.
Mm-hmm. We don't yet have language like this. We don't yet know what a generator is. But yes, this would be the next step. So for those who know what this is a cyclic group. And yes, we have a generator. It has order 4. And cyclic groups are abelian, so we always have the commutativity law. Yes. 10 seconds for the experts. But on a very basic level, if you were in school and you were drawing a square and you would explain rotations to kids in school, and you start with 90 degrees and then you have 180 degrees and then 170 and you go round, how would you explain to a kid what happens if you apply a 90 degrees rotation twice, once and then once more? What would be the new rotation angle? Yes, you add rotation angles. And the addition of rotation angles does not care which way around you add the angles. This is the answer. So we can do this with matrices, but it's way too complicated. You can do it on a very basic level, like with school kids. And I'm saying this because sometimes it's easy to get caught up in the abstract language and to forget very elementary arguments. And mathematical thinking needs both. It needs us to be very precise and abstract where it's necessary, but sometimes it also needs us to step one step back and to have an intuitive and very elementary understanding of what is going on. I would like to encourage you to try both. And we need to find our right level. It's not the same for everyone. It will be different. Because all you and your intuitions are different. Yes?
So in these maps, there were some elements which were not changing, like 1, 2.
Yes, for a rotation, this cannot happen unless you have the identity map. Yeah. Actually, we will classify later the symmetry group of regular n-gons, and then we will come to some of these principles of what does a symmetry do and how can we find common principles and how can we distinguish different symmetries and their behaviors. But it's too early for that right now. But we are touching on it. I would like to turn your attention to another detail. I can take a triangle and I can number the corners, 1, 2, 3, and then all my little maps here, all my 6 permutations have an interpretation as a symmetry of the triangle. We have seen rotations. There are these two guys here. And for these, we can also find a geometric interpretation. You can think about this when we take a little break. If I add the number 4, then the system breaks down. Of course, I can take a square and number the corners 1 to 4. But there are 24 permutations, and there's no way I find an interpretation for all of them in a geometric way as symmetry of the square. So somehow what happens with the triangle is an accident because things are so small, and after that, no way. And there is a principle behind that. Just taking the set means we have lots of permutations, lots of possible maps, imposing geometry on it,
And imposing that the map should respect this geometry reduces the number of possibilities. So this can be very important for modeling and for simulations and for calculations. And I use it for the design of algorithms, this principle. So it's very powerful, it's very easy, and we have seen it here in the first 90 minutes of our time together. Should we have a little break? 10 minutes? What do you think? Your faces tell me that a little break would be good.
10 minutes, let me check my watch. Yes, so it's 10:30, 10 minutes, so we start again at 40.